world gone insane. An upside-down civilization cannot be real. A world of madness and terror.
It's the Dana Gould Hour.
Today's show is brought to you by Casper. Get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/Dana and using the promo code Dana. The first interview I recorded for what was to be the November 2016 episode of this podcast took place on November 8th with my friend Pete Aronson. Pete is the head of original programming for the Independent Film Channel, Los Angeles Bureau. Pete and I had a fascinating conversation about how television has changed in the last 20 years, the rise of digital platforms, how Netflix has completely rewritten the laws of television, and how the minivan DVD player started the whole thing. Pete's an incredibly smart and funny guy, and it was a great conversation. And even though we recorded it the day before the election, we didn't even bother to talk about it much because we were both so sure Hillary Clinton was going to take that thing in a walk that it was barely worth discussing. I know! What a difference! What a difference a day makes! Just one day! Holy shit! Jesus shitballs! I know! Wow! Wow! So Pete and I will be on the Christmas episode of this podcast coming in a couple of weeks, along with the great Drew Friedman and also the great Cliff Nesteroff, author of the book The Comedians, now in paperback. But for today, I had to backtrack and rebook this puppy, because shit got real and we couldn't ignore it. So for today, I'm going to give you both sides of the political spectrum, from my point of view. Neither side an advocate of Donald Trump, as I said, from my point of view. Certainly, I have an advocate for the right and an advocate for the left. Why? Well, if there is one thing I took away from this election is that I was living inside a media misinformation bubble. I existed pretty much on a steady diet of the Huffington Post and the MSNBC Daily Outrage drip, and I don't ever want that to happen again. I love me some Lawrence O'Donnell. I love me some Chris Matthews. But a steady diet of all of that stuff, too much. There are too many people in this country talking past each other. The internet, which was supposed to unite us, has divided us farther. And I am of the belief that the election of someone like Donald Trump is in part a direct result of an electorate too far ensconced in their own ideological redoubts to communicate even the simplest disagreements constructively. And that has to stop. Also, since the election, a lot of people, including myself, are full of fear, loathing, and anxiety. And maybe that's something we can work on a little bit as well. To that end, we have the hilarious and excellent Eddie Pepitone. Follow him on Twitter at Eddie Pepitone. Eddie was for Bernie, and I was for Hillary. And in retrospect, I think Eddie supported Bernie for the right reasons. He believed in his message. I supported Hillary Clinton for the wrong ones. I mistakenly felt she had the best chance of beating Donald Trump. Point Pepitone. Also, from NBC's Meet the Press and his own podcast, Radio Free GOP, Mike Murphy is here. Mike is no Trump enthusiast, to be sure, but he is not in a free fall psychological lather either, so I thought it wise to seek his counsel. But first, a little business. Thanks to all of you for watching Stand Against Evil this past month. I hope you enjoyed it. The show is, as we say, a hit. And although, as of this writing, there has been no official word on a second season, the unofficial word is very encouraging. Although I no longer believe the polls until the results are in. But things look good, and I have all of you to thank for that. See this space for further details. As far as my stand-up career, that's still going. I will be in Bloomington, Indiana, the land of Pence, December 1st, 2nd, and 3rd at the Comedy Attic. And on December 9th and 10th in Burlington, Vermont, the land of Sanders, at the Vermont Comedy Club. On New Year's Eve, I will be in beautiful Honolulu, Hawaii, at the Neil Blaisdell Concert Hall with Bill Maher and Margaret Cho. And on New Year's Day, though at night, at the Maui Arts and Cultural Center on Maui, also with Bill and Margaret. For details and ticket links for all of these, please visit the live shows page at danagould.com. And in the meantime,
class. It's the Dana Gould Hour Podcast.
The Dana Gould Hour. Listen all the time and give us all your money. That's all we ask.
Yes, there's an air about hot coffee that's hard to resist. Won't you have some now?
It's showtime.
My guest today, there is no other person I wanted to talk to after the events of 11-9 than my friend Edward Horatio Pepitone.
Hello, everybody. The American dream is dead. It is deader than a doornail, but we're gonna soldier on with our brand of witty humor in the face of complete fascism.
We are the funniest comedy team in Vichy France. What? Tell me. Now, you were saying when you walked in the door that ever since Trump got elected, everything has been going amazing for you. Just on a personal level.
I don't know what it is.
Your skin is clearing up.
Everything
is clearing improved.
Up. Everything's clearing up. My doctor said the liver spots are gone. He said it has something to do with the new administration. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's how I am. When things are bad in the outside world, internally, I always clear up. I don't know what that is.
I do. I'm the same exact way. Because we exist in a state of chaos emotionally, and when the outside world is in a chaotic state, that allows us to go in the opposite direction. It's the way that people that have ADHD essentially take speed to calm down. Because it counteracts it. And that's what it is. I believe the chaos of the outside world counteracts the chaos in your head, and you move towards a state of greater zen.
Well, it's also people – have you heard
this? I should have lived in Nazi Germany. I would have been so calm. I would have been the John Denver of Nazi Germany.
Joseph Goebbels, hi, Weimar Republic. Joseph Goebbels, hi, Weimar Republic. It's also like the people – you ever hear this?
How do you sing a song about the V2 rocket to the tune of Grandma's Feather Bed?
You do it.
I don't know. I'm asking.
But it's also – you ever hear of people who cannot function in normal life? Like they're just –
they're called actresses, Eddie.
Hell yes.
Hell yes, I know those people.
Well, no, I mean people who only can function in crisis, kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
If there's a crisis, they're great. But as soon as life is just day to day, like, oh, I got to go to the store. Ah, fuck. And they get paralyzed.
Yeah.
They get paralyzed. But crisis, they're great. Let me get Billy's trapped under the car. Well, I feel great. I feel terrific. Like Billy's trapped under the car. I feel terrific. Like I have something to do. You know?
I think I know what I want to do with my life.
I want to get Billy out of there.
I want to open a skate shop. Now, I think how you reacted to the election will tell us a lot of how you operate in a crisis. Because my reaction was not what I thought it would be.
What was your reaction? Seriously. Or are you being funny?
No, I'm not being funny.
Because you being funny, by the way, is annoying, actually.
Yeah, it's needy.
No, but what is it? Yeah, it is needy. I know that one.
Yeah. when Einstein was describing black holes, he pointed to my baby picture and said, in the way this guy's needy. It's just an endless suck.
Oh, my God.
Endless vacuum of need.
Oh, my God.
I
can I just tell you how a friend described it? He said it's the same feeling.
So I'm not?
He described it as the same feeling as after 9/11, this election. Like this same – and I said, well, that attack came from without. And this one feels like it's even more ominous.
Yes. Like on 9/11, giggled like a schoolgirl. No, I'm kidding. When I knew it was over, I lived in the same media bubble for 2 years. And I'm never going back in that bubble. And
good.
So
you mean before this election?
Right, yeah. Let me say this.
No, you are a guy who lives in a certain media bubble, whereas I am a guy who lives in a more enlightened,
in a different
bubble.
Media bubble.
Yeah.
I think Donald Trump is a pig, and I hope he does a good job because I want the country to do well. He doesn't seem to be staffing his administration with people that will fit my definition of a good job.
That is the understatement of the century.
Right, and here's why it is an understatement. People don't listen to you when you say, well, you're an idiot, and here's what I think.
I know.
There's too much of that.
You're right.
On the left and the right. And the left has a lot of dirty laundry on this. And
yeah, tell me that, I am that left. I am like super far left. And why does the left have dirty laundry?
Well,
the left. I'm talking about Sanders, the left of Sanders.
Left
people yelling at people.
I don't think that that's what – I don't think that Sanders is the problem. I think he was the solution, actually.
Right. Me too.
There was in my
– What do you mean by the left have a lot of dirty laundry?
There's a big disconnect between working class Americans and the Democratic Party, who is purportedly their champion, in the same way that you will hear in a right wing or a conservative news group that conservative Republican policies benefit lower income African Americans, but they only vote Democratic. And Democrats will say, lower middle class, blue collar families, our policies benefit them, but they won't vote for us. And it's because people vote for who they want to see in the mirror. I love Barack Obama because that's who I see myself as, urbane, tolerant. And there is a reason there's been so much of a, if I'm using the word, a spasm of revulsion at the concept of Donald Trump, is that a lot of people don't want to see Donald Trump in the mirror. And I don't think they were voting for Hillary Clinton. They were voting against Donald Trump. And that person never wins. John Kerry nobody voted for John Kerry. Everybody voted against George W. Bush. But that never wins. People vote for something. And it's very hard in the change election, and this was a change election, to not be the agent of change. This is terrible change, but that's how I think it happened.
Well, first of all, just to address, I don't think
the I've let you talk long enough.
I don't think the Democratic Party is the left. And that's what's so fucked up. That's what's so fucked up about what's going on in this country, that the right is coming at the Democratic Party. It's insane to me that people are attacking Barack Obama, who is a centrist at best.
Yeah, totally.
And the Democratic Party, since Ronald Reagan, since Bill Clinton, has gone far to the right, and they're a little left of the Republicans, though the Republicans think I'm batshit crazy. But nobody, and this is the problem, one of the problems, nobody represents the working man. The Democratic Party doesn't, and that's why the working man. If the Democratic Party did, I don't think there would be so many. This is me, because I've heard now so much talk about this and think pieces about the bigotry and the racism that exists in this country. I think if the Democratic Party didn't abandon these fucking small towns and let corporations just take their fucking jobs, America now, half of it's in poverty. I don't think this bigotry and racism would have a pot to boil in.
No, racism.
But they've been fucked.
Racism and dictatorships come from scared, cold, hungry people.
Okay. And that's what's going on. And the Democratic Party has abandoned the working class. This is my point of view.
I don't argue with you. I'm not arguing with you.
And
I agree with you.
No, but I'm hearing stuff like, well, the Democrats, they lost this fucking election.
Yes, they did.
I mean, WikiLeaks, who I like WikiLeaks, right? But WikiLeaks, that you remember that one of the things that was revealed about Hillary was her saying, well, I don't know. Me and Bill really don't know. I think she said me and Bill, but she said, we don't really know the problems of what's going on with the middle class. We're doing so well. That was one of the things that was leaked. That was that was one of the things. And that is a fucking huge problem.
No, yeah. Well,
but I hate the Republicans more. I just want to say that because they stoked that shit.
Yeah.
The right, and they have now They're ruining. They are. I was reading this guy. My guy is Chris Hedges, and reading somebody else. It's amazing how the Democrats are. The Republicans. This wing of the Republican Party that's out of their fucking minds. That's now in power.
Yes,
is actually
every lever of power
just trying to destroy the human species. Period. I think.
As so goes the left, so too goes the right. For every action, an equal and opposite reaction. And so I now find myself sitting across from, as nature intended, the anti-Pepitone. political strategist, fellow podcaster, and also my good friend, Mike Murphy.
This is the sound of my voice. Now, hey, Dana, how you doing?
Hi, Mike. Now, Michael, you... I like to think of our friendship as the only way forward this country has.
We are the last great hope.
You are a conservative Republican, a right-wing Republican, and yet I can attest I have seen you eat with a knife and fork. Moments ago watched you pet a dog.
That's right. A chihuahua, too. A Mexican dog. Yeah.
That was
exactly. I didn't see the papers, by the way. Did he tunnel in?
Yes. I had a nice American dog, and then a little Mexican dog took his job.
For half the food.
Much less, actually. Much less if you knew the beautiful Bella. The best dog ever up in dog heaven. But long story short, I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
That you have no doubt been asked on many a news program in the past week, but I will ask it to you in a way that I don't think you have yet been asked.
Okay.
What in the name of Jesus fuck happened on November 9th?
Well, it is a bit of a wonderment. You know, we were all wrong. All of us professional pontificators and pundits, I was massively wrong. In fact, I strongly predicted the race would be over quickly in Florida, and that would be it, and Trump couldn't win. He was in a demographic cul-de-sac, blah, 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 and I was massively wrong, which really bothers me because I take what I do seriously, and for 30 years, I've been right.
And this is your job. You have run political campaigns.
Yeah, no. I mean, and the only small solace is that everybody else in my racket was wrong too, because we were all looking at the tools we usually use for this, which is historical voting patterns, polling data, you know, yada, yada, yada. Yet Trump won. So I guess to kind of babble on for a minute to do the numbers, because I think it's important before we get into the left wing hate, and the right wing hate too.
Yeah. We're going to go at each other.
Yeah.
Oh, nail
no,
and talk.
Cats and dogs. Yeah. To figure out, let's start with the facts, because they're often lost in the debate of what kind of happened. So, interestingly, when all the votes are counted, because there's still a bunch up, particularly here in left-wing California, Hillary Clinton will have won the popular vote by 2 million, maybe a few more, 2.2 million votes. That's about 1.4, 1.5% of the electorate. But the Electoral College, of course, Trump won the most states with the most electors, so he will be president. That's the way the system works, fair and square.
Right.
What's interesting is we've had five of these elections in our history where the popular vote winner lost the election because of the Electoral College.
The last one was Al Gore.
Yeah, the famous Bush-Gore thing in 2000. But what's interesting about this is we've never had a difference that big of 2 million votes. So in the market of voting, Hillary Clinton got more votes. Yet under the rules we have, Donald Trump is indeed our president-elect. So you have to look at how he picked the lock of the Electoral College. And there are really three states that he won, any one of which would have tipped it over, because he won most of the swing states, North Carolina, Florida, Ohio, won Ohio pretty big.
And but no one thought he was going to run the table on those.
No, most people thought, I sure did, and I've done a lot of races in Florida, that he was in trouble there. Most people thought he'd win Ohio. Most people thought she would win, and she did, Virginia and Colorado. But nobody thought he would win the three states he won, any one of which would tip the balance in the Electoral College. Pennsylvania, which Republicans have not carried in a presidential race since 1988. Wisconsin, which they have not won, Republicans, we have not won since 84. Or Michigan, my home state, which we have not won since 88. Now, if you take Trump's margin of victory, in those three states combined, it's only 100,000 votes, give or take a few. We're still counting in Detroit. Yeah. So it was kind of a narrow deal with fewer overall votes. Now, when you dive in to kind of wrap this up, because it's important, you know, the media has a way of making everything absolute. It was a crushing Trump landslide or right. whatever. You can really break it down to two voter groups. Trump did very well with blue-collar voters in the industrial Midwest. He flipped 12 counties in Michigan that Barack Obama won last time. Places like Macomb County, an industrial county north of Detroit, Monroe County, an industrial county south of Detroit. If you've ever seen Roger and Me, that was filmed around Flint, Michigan, three right. counties there. Trump flipped two of them. Right. You know, right in Michael Moore Central there. It's big right. GM factory town.
And Michael Moore predicted that that would happen.
Yeah,
he
did.
He's one of the few voices on the left that had a Michael Moore and Bill Maher are the only two people that I know on the left that were like, I'm not comfortable about this at all.
Yeah,
I don't think this is even a little in the bag.
Which proves it's a batshit election. Moore does have a feel for that. And the same thing happened in Wisconsin and in Pennsylvania. You look at my favorite county in all this is Luzerne County, Pennsylvania, which has had a hard 80 years. It's Wilkes-Barre.
80 north, years.
Northeast. Yeah, they've had coal mine fires, then the coal mining industry going away in the 50s, and terrible cataclysmic floods. I mean, I've been there. I did a congressional race there early in my career. Everybody's either on oxygen or a walker. It's one of the oldest congressional districts in the country. Normally, it goes back and forth between the parties, tilting Democrat. The record used to be Ronald Reagan, who carried Luzerne County, Wilkes-Barre, by 8,000 votes, more or less. Obama carried it by, I think, 3,000 or 4,000. Trump carried it by 27,000. He broke the meter there.
Jesus.
Now, simultaneously, Trump underperformed in some of the traditional Republican suburbs. When the early Florida returns came in, everybody in Florida politics who is experienced in this stuff, Republican and Democrat, looked at our early bellwether counties, and Trump was behind Romney. He wasn't going to win Florida. But then the exurban counties came in, like Pasco north of Tampa, or Hernando north of Tampa, and he broke the meter. So there's a real surge for Trump in blue-collar America, where frankly they're more concerned about jobs leaving and wages than they were about bathroom rights. On
right.
the other side of the equation, not in the East Coast, but in the industrial Midwest, African-American.
So you're saying that they didn't get the memo out of Bel Air.
Yeah.
Of what we thought the election was really about.
The human rights campaign didn't quite sway him. If you're swinging a hammer in Macomb County,
yeah.
and you know people that used to be in the manufacturing business and aren't anymore, you weren't that concerned with LGBT bathroom rights. You,
right.
you wanted to hear about jobs, and that's something that Hillary Clinton did not dominate on. And then there's one other part to this. In the cities in the Midwest, particularly in those two states we care about here, Wisconsin and Michigan in our analysis, she came out of Wayne County, which is Detroit and some suburbs around Detroit, mostly blue collar, some white collar. She came out of that county 78,000 votes behind Barack Obama, and she only lost the state of Michigan by 11 or 12,000 votes. So she was like wiped out. And I never expected she'd get an Obama number, but I thought she'd get a solid number, maybe be 50 or 40,000 votes behind him. So five times her margin or more came just out of her underperformance, particularly in the city of Detroit. Same story in Milwaukee for losing Wisconsin, a state she only lost by 28,000 votes. She was about 25,000, 30,000 votes short in Milwaukee County. So I've been joking all year that she is the Dasani water of politics. It's everywhere, but nobody really wants it. Nobody walks a mile for a Dasani.
Well, let me.
So
let
she me failed, and he overperformed in some segments, but not all segments of the Republican electorate. He had a very different coalition.
Yeah,
that was enough to find those one or three of those states and pick the lock of the Electoral College.
There's three things that I think are important to establish. One, for the record, you are famously no fan.
I didn't vote for either of them here in California, where my vote doesn't really count anywhere.
Right.
I was openly anti-Trump Republican
right.
because I don't think he's a conservative like I am, and
right.
I don't think he passes the character test to be president. That said, I put Radio Free GOP, the excellent podcast, partially right. inspired by this thing here, on hiatus
this
because this train wreck right here. Now you got a hit TV show. We're all hoping you kind of put this thing aside for a while, Dana. But I'm hoping he'll be a success. I'm not betting my house that
right.
I'm going to see an improved Trump, but you got to kind of get behind the president for a little while and give him a shot. So
right.
I'm turning my bile way down. I'm going to try to behave on this podcast.
Well, and that's why I'm really concentrating and making the effort to find out what happened and to talk to people with whom I disagree. I've had a bit of a sea change in my thinking. Not that I'm conservative where I wasn't before. I'm absolutely not. But I do feel, to that degree that I was in an information bubble, that I'm alarmed that I was so arrogant and wrong in what happened. And a lot of these counties that you're talking about, Macomb County is a great example. To me, that's a Democratic county. Working class people, I grew up working class, and when I was growing up, we were Democrats. And I see the Democratic Party has, to a large degree, forfeited those. And the reason that I am determined to find out who voted for him and why, because for my own part, I would like this to not happen again.
It's hard to kind of summarize this stuff, but if you had to, you could say that if you work with your hands in America, if you make your living with your hands, other than probably a $300 an hour holistic masseuse in Beverly Hills or right. something, you've had a pretty shitty decade.
Right.
Even longer. There's been no Obama miracle for you. And before that, you can argue during the Bush years, economic growth wasn't that great. So you're
especially at the very, very end.
your real wages have been flat. So yes. You're working harder for less.
Right.
And you're seeing.
So are we.
Well, yeah, underpaid television people. But fundamentally, you're working hard, but your dollar buys less. You're losing faith in the future of the American dream. You're getting older. You're seeing the country change culturally. You're not so sure about that.
Right.
And you wonder who's on your side. So even some clown from reality TV shows up and says, hey, Ford Motor Company, you're not going to move production, even though it's not true they were really going to do that. But hey, come on, it's reality show campaign truth. We'll get to that later. The perception is that Trump will stand up against these, you know, jobs going to Mexico, even though the facts don't really bear that out. And a quick plug, if you really want to know the facts about international trade, go to iTunes, look up one of the old Radio Free GOP episodes I had Bob Zolick in.
Bob
Zolick, the famous U.S. trade.
Zoelick. Okay.
Huge head of the World Bank for a time. I can hear half your listeners. Oh, report him to Bernie. Really smart guy on trade and explains how this really works. And I think on the website, we put up a couple of op-ed pieces he wrote because it would be nice to have the facts in international trade be part of the argument. They're not right now. The TPP, you know, we're going to screw the Chinese by not doing the TPP. Right. The Chinese aren't in the TPP. It's actually a counterbalance to them. But back to the point, the perception was who's somebody on our side to recapture the America that we've enjoyed, that put the working class into the middle class, particularly in manufacturing, in that industrial belt from Wisconsin, Minnesota, all the way over to upstate New York. And they sure didn't think it was Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
But and they thought it was Donald Trump.
There's two things that I really learned in the time since the election. One that was really misunderstood the antipathy towards Hillary Clinton specifically in the electorate. I'm not saying it's 100% deserved. I think 30 years of propaganda will tar you pretty good. She does have some ethical blind spots.
What was the year? Remember, we knew from every poll that people hated politics and they hated the system.
Right.
And she was seen through the prism of the system.
Right.
Now, I kind of like the system. Maybe I'm part of it, but I like competency and professionalism. I wasn't crazy about her because she had an ethical cataract the size of, you know, my house. But it was still the system becomes this cartoon, but people wanted to punish it. So even though nobody really liked Trump, even among his own voters, he's not that popular.
And that is the other thing that I learned. This was not about the Republican Party. If it was, Jeb Bush would have taken it.
Well, yeah, it was about firing the system.
This is fuck you.
Well,
and throwing a hand grenade into Washington, D.C. I talked to a lot of people that feel like they resent, to speak in very broad terms, they resent Bill Clinton for starting NAFTA. They hate George W. Bush for signing it. They hate Barack Obama for not changing it. That's NAFTA is a catch-all for all of their woes.
Right.
Billy Joel wrote Allentown years before NAFTA. Mechanization and globalization has been eking into our economy for decades.
Yeah. Globalization has been tough, but net-net, I'll argue, as a free trade conservative, it's been a good thing. Net-net. Yeah. The problem is some jobs go down, other jobs go up. And so that dislocation creates a lot of angst.
Right. But I felt like the Democratic Party forgot, it's the show Roseanne. It's the people who live in the house on the show Roseanne. And I am of the belief that they benefit from Democratic policies. But the Democratic Party doesn't speak to them culturally anymore.
But this has always been the problem. I've been doing this 30 years. And whenever we win working class voters on the Republican side, forget Trump all the way along. Reagan used to get this all the time. The Dems immediately go to, Cambridge and have a meeting, and a bunch of academic socialists say, well, don't these working class idiots with their bowling alleys and their guns understand that our global socialism is going to lift them up by confiscating money? And assume the model of politics where everybody votes on economic class when, in fact, they vote on culture.
Exactly.
And the Democrats, the cultural elites that drive the Democratic Party, which, by the way, as somebody who lives in California and often works in New York, I'm more a member of that crowd sometimes than I am, I don't live in Detroit, Michigan anymore.
Yeah. Well, people should know, and I'll, your house is made of gold.
Well, it's silver, but... all of which is confiscated by the socialist tax authorities here in California, where I'm trying to bring the system down from the inside. But my point being, the elites of the Democratic Party have become so connected to the social issue left that they kind of crowd out the other arguments. Like, you look right now, the DNC is going to have a new chairperson as part of the rubble that's now the Democratic Party. And the candidates are Keith Ellison, the world's nicest guy in politics from Minnesota, who basically thinks we need a drum circle and, some dialogue in Esperanto, the language of all cultures. The head of the pro-choice league, professional feminist, not that there's anything wrong with that, and send letters to Dana. He's the one who hates feminism, not me. but what we're not seeing is anybody who swings a hammer for a living in Youngstown, Ohio.
No.
The old Hubert Humphrey kind of labor working class.
Well, doesn't Howard Dean also want that job back?
Yeah. He's announced an interest in it, and there'll be more.
I liked Howard Dean because I liked the 50-state strategy. I thought that was bold.
I don't remember what it was.
Well, when Howard Dean ran the DNC, he said, I want to compete in every state. I want to talk to people in every state.
Yeah.
And I think that he does understand. He does understand that.
From the metal bending furnaces of Vermont.
Right. Well, the People's Republic of Vermont.
Exactly. So the questions for the Dems are they going to be able to get back into the white working class or not? And the question for both parties are, even if you forget about Trump's electoral success, you got to give him, he got the votes, although I would say there's a stain on his campaign for how he did it. You have to say, will any of them get people to believe again? Because Trump can't make globalization go away, neither can the Democrats.
No.
So who's actually going to be able to have an agenda that raises wages? Now, we called the Jeb Super PAC Right to Rise because our theory was that the right free enterprise policies, the right free market policies, the right reform agenda on the institutions of upward social mobility, and with fancy talk like that, no wonder nobody voted for us. But basically, that idea would lift everybody.
I don't know a Democrat that would not be happy today if they found out they had a bad dream and Jeb Bush was the president.
Well,
I don't know anybody.
Yeah, no, he's enough of a conservative. See, here's an important point of this. There are two things that should drive the left crazy about this outcome. One is the ideological result, which is conservatives won and they lost, fair and square. So if I was a liberal, that would bug me because policies I like are going away and policies I don't like are coming in. But that's politics. We conservatives lived through that under Obama.
Right.
Welcome to the two-way door. Next time, win the election.
Right.
That's a legit grief. The other challenge and reason I'd be mad as a liberal, and I'm a little mad as a conservative, but I'm muting myself for a while, is the character faults of Donald Trump.
Yeah.
We now have a president with some character problems, and we have to see, is there any chance, and I think it's small, but I'm going to bet on it because it's the best outcome, that he can rise to the office a little bit. He wasn't bad election night. He's just put out the leak today that, no, they're not going to prosecute Hillary Clinton. He's trying to unwrap things a little.
Yeah.
That should be encouraged.
But when you say that he wasn't bad on election night, that is what gives people like, that's where I get it, the chill, because it's like how far we've lowered the bar. You know, it's like a dancing bear. No, he's not really dancing well, but it's a bear and it is dancing.
Yeah, it did four steps in a row.
Yeah. And I think a lot of social, like, yeah, I think I'm absolutely the, an example of somebody who votes for who they want to see in the mirror. I see Barack Obama as somebody I aspire to be. He's urbane. He's erudite. He cares about. I'm also not naive, and I know how the world works, and I know.
But
how
yeah, explain to that
works.
When you vote for somebody you want to see in the mirror. I mean, I understand why you're wearing a dress right now.
But that's exactly right. I didn't vote for anybody. I voted against someone I really did not see in the mirror.
Right. But,
which is Donald Trump.
Yeah.
I don't understand. I don't, you know, my friend, there's two great jokes. I'm going to quote two really funny comedians. Mike Lawrence, who's a brilliant comedian, who said, "I'm voting for Hillary Clinton the same reason I tell my stepdad I love him. I don't really feel it, but I'm afraid of what'll happen if I don't."
That's funny.
He said, "I'm voting for Hillary Clinton the same way I get frozen yogurt when the ice cream store is closed." These are all the very funny Mike Lawrence. And I also know the difference, as my friend, the great Kevin Rooney, says, the difference between a liberal and a conservative. A conservative says, "I got mine. Fuck you, get yours." And a liberal says, "No, this person needs help. Let's give him your money."
Right.
You know, that's, you know, in very broad terms, I understand how the world works. I don't see how you get a film clip of a guy making fun of a disabled reporter, a grown man who would not only do that, but would do that on camera.
Right.
To me, that is so far removed from what I see in reality. I quite literally don't know how it didn't end there. And the fact that it went to where it went is where I ended. It has nothing
to do with— But it's back to what you just said.
It has nothing to do with any policy whatsoever.
Yeah, it's back to what you said. So he's credentialed himself as an asshole with that behavior and other behavior like that. So he's an asshole.
Yeah.
But in the two-way binary choice of which asshole—
Right.
Even, you know, people are, one, tribally Republican, and they want to stop bad Democratic ideas. Yeah. So, all right, this asshole is going to be my club to beat on the system.
Right.
I admit he's an asshole.
There's a left,
things are
right,
never affirmations of love.
No, there's a left-right tribal cognitive bias that you cannot escape.
Well, we're also caught in this thing now. Bill Gray coined this, a former congressman from Florida, Democrat, former minister, actually, who said, our politics has now become, I'm right, you're evil.
Yes.
And when you're in a game of I'm right, you're evil, any charge against the other guy is fair, and any presumption of horribleness is totally fair. No,
right.
No doubt, no benefit of the doubt is given. It becomes a battle of absolutes, and you get alternate reality universes.
Right.
Now, that said, Trump's done a lot to earn his, and only Trump can undo it as president. And I do think he wants the love of the country. So, you know, we've had something not akin to this, because I won't do that to a former president. And I heard this story originally from a friend whose father fought in the war, and he was reminiscing about 1945, how horrified all the servicemen who'd just given their blood of fighting foreign enemies were, that a guy who couldn't even get a hat and tie store together out of the Pendergast, totally corrupt, totally graft-ridden political machine of Kansas City, was now going to be president in Harry Truman,
right.
You know, famous loser,
right.
Political hack.
And following the most beloved president
right.
Up to that time.
At a time of national crisis with Uncle Joe Stalin ruling the map all the way to the Atlantic Ocean. So Truman rose to the occasion. Others have too.
And again, it's important to look at history. And that's what I've been trying to do, because I will tell you, I could not watch the end of the election. I watched the Ron Howard Beatles documentary. I did not see it. But according to my girlfriend, I sat up in bed at 4:35 and said, "Donald Trump is the fucking president," and then went back to bed. So it affected me on an emotional level. And then I quickly realized that's not right. And I was too far gone in an alternative reality bubble. And what I am trying to do, and I really advise people, and I actually think in my own way, if we're going to listen to what Gandhi said and be the change that we want, people who consider themselves inclusive and progressive need to expand their definition of that to include people with whom they disagree politically.
this is so telling that you're quoting Gandhi. I'll be a Republican and quote George S. Patton. We're going to grab him by the throat and we're going to kick him in the ass. It's, that's what my Democrat friends are all saying. They're beating their dream catchers into daggers and weapons now.
I'm whittling my dream catcher into a knife.
It makes a good eye stabber. My wife is one of them.
By
She's
the way,
totally.
Never buy a dream catcher that you've never get a dream catcher that you found at the dumpster behind the insane asylum.
It's already got that little crimson coating on it. I would say this.
Wife is a bigger hippie than me. People should understand.
She's a good Democrat farm labor girl from Minneapolis we cancel each other's votes out. Although this year I didn't vote for either of them.
Your house is spy versus spy.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's what I learned, and it speaks to how I responded in the crisis. The first rational thought I had, when I realized that we weren't going to win, the Democrats not winning this election was like the sun not coming. I was like, no. I was told every day for 2 years I had this in the bag.
Yeah, I know.
So I spent 2 years eyeball deep in news that was all bullshit. And I'm never going to get a fucking second of that time back. And that annoys the fuck out of me.
By the way, this...
And I don't need to hear Rachel Maddow and Chris Hayes screaming at each other over who's right more anymore.
Yeah. Is that what you were in the MSNBC bubble?
Yeah, I was in the MSNBC.
Yeah, not me, man.
Huffington Post bubble. Yeah. Just the daily hysteria machine that I completely unplugged from.
And and all about Hillary, right? Not about Sanders.
Yes, they kind of
swept Sanders to the side.
No, it was bad. It was wrong. It was bad. And it was, how could these unemployed steel workers in Oklahoma, didn't they listen to his lecture on their abuse of gender privilege? Who are they voting for?
How did the Ohio Rust Belt not listen to Lena Dunham?
White male privilege was supposed to be over, and I'm astounded that these guys didn't go along with it, that they felt like their party had abandoned them. There are people who used to have a good paying factory job, and now they're working as a greeter at Walmart. Their kids aren't going to soccer practice because dad has to drive the minivan as a lift on the weekend to pay the bills.
And they have no health care.
They have no health care, no prospects, and yet they don't have any concern over where Caitlyn Jenner shits at the mall, and that's the problem.
But talk about a little bit about that MSNBC bubble. Like, that's just that. What is that's like the out of touch, quote unquote, like to me, mild left. I mean, they're corporate left. They're television news left.
Well, it's not news. It's just opinion. Yeah. It's just opinion every day. And I really am fed up with it. And if I sound like I'm angry and shitting on the left, it's or the Democrats or the Democrat music, it's because I'm furious at them because they fucked this up. And I don't want this should not have happened. So yeah, I am pissed off at them, and I'm being very self-critical. You know, to myself as well, because this should not, to me, should not have occurred. But I did start talking to a lot of conservatives and Republicans, and of whom I know many.
Right.
And I was like, okay, I'm horrified. And I never envisioned this could happen. How did it happen and why should I not be horrified? And I learned three major things. Mm-hmm. One, first and foremost, most whack-offable first lady since Jackie O. And you can't just sweep that aside.
No, really? Okay.
No.
I know we talked about her ruining porn.
Yeah, she did ruin porn for me because every porn star looks like her. And you turn on porn now, it's just like, oh, it just looks like the first lady. She has that same sort of – there's the same spark of life in her eyes that you only get from a lizard sunning itself on a rock.
Yeah, by the way, that is true. Like, I look at that family and I don't see real life in them.
I can't look
at that. Trump. Like, do you know that I was also guilty of like,
oh yeah,
not,
you're guilty, Eddie.
Well, I know I'm guilty. My father told me I am a piece of shit.
Your elbow deep in blood and gore.
No, but I thought there was no way Trump could win this election.
Me neither. That's what we were told.
No, because I just wrote him off. A friend of mine said, you know, when he came down from Trump Tower on day one spewing that racist shit, you know, about yeah. Mexicans being rapists. It should have ended there. He should have been in a civil society.
Yeah.
He should have been completely disregarded day one.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, no, no, not even day one. When he started that birther bullshit,
yep.
this is a guy who started birther bullshit. But by the way, what I do is when I hear that, I just kind of like, well, he's a complete fucking troglodyte moron. And I don't take him seriously, but
right.
I can't believe that other people would,
well, they don't. See, this
would
is,
vote for him.
Well, here's why they did. We, in our cultural frame of reference, have no clear view of how much hatred there is in this country for Hillary Clinton. I'm not saying it's deserved. I'm saying it exists. It's 30 years of propaganda, and she has some ethical blind spots. There's no doubt about it.
But, right. Have you ever heard the stuff about who the Clintons have killed?
Yeah, yeah, I know. But yeah,
there's people, a list of people who
people
have died.
Despise her.
Yeah.
Two, this isn't about Republican philosophy or Republican ideals.
Mm.
Because if it was, Jeb Bush would have won in a walk.
Right.
This was about
lunatic fringe of the Republican
this
Party.
This is people who feel there was a district in Pennsylvania that voted. Obama won it by like 6% in 2004, by 4% in 2008,
mm-hmm.
and Trump took it by 8%.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this district did not become racist overnight. These are people that voted for Obama, and then they voted for Trump. And there's a lot of them.
Well,
they're not all racist.
Goes to the fact that the Democratic Party and Mr. Obama, who, by the way, the liberals I know and the liberals in the traditional sense that I know are all very big proponents of Obama. I see Obama as a guy who didn't deliver on a lot of things to these people that we're now talking about.
He didn't.
Also,
I don't feel that he is the Adlai Stevenson presidency we were denied in the 50s.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I do feel like these people that voted for Trump were saying, fuck you to the Republicans and to the Democrats. They blame the Clintons for starting NAFTA, George W. Bush for signing it, and Obama for not fixing everything. They hate both parties, and Trump was their way of saying, fuck you. Fuck all of you. And it was an anger.
You're right.
It was a decision made in anger.
Except I wish that they – you see, I still don't – and this is my disconnect to those people having just lived in New York and L.A.
Mm-hmm.
and been in my own little fucking weird
right.
– because I'm at a – I'm insane too. Like my little weird performing – I perform in front of people. Hello, everything's great. No, I'm serious.
You're a modern-day vaudevillian.
I'm a narcissist.
Yeah.
And there's a great narcissism.
You were raised in a little town called Vaudeville, USA. And every day you pledge allegiance to showmanship and pizzazz.
Daddy, where are my tap shoes?
Right.
You're a piece of shit.
Yes.
That's why I want them.
Yes, you're the only flag. the only flag you salute is the IATSE banner. You're an un-American.
But I still don't know. But I was just to finish the sentence. And then I want to make one other point, is that I still don't know why they voted for Trump, how they could not see the evil that he is. And here's the thing. They voted for this guy out of anger, and he is the last guy to help these people.
That's the
sad part. Is the last guy to help these people. All they're going to do is fucking give tax breaks and the incredible funneling of wealth that has gone on since Reagan in this country to the uppermost of the poppermost is going to continue. And it's just unbelievable. They voted for a person who is going to not do a thing for them. And by the way, the guy I read, Chris Hedges, he starts his article like this. It's called "It's Worse Than You Think." And he, after Trump wins the election, and he said, I don't know when the supporters of Donald Trump are going to realize that they've been betrayed, but I know that it's going to happen. And when it happens, it's going to be ugly.
Yeah. I think it will happen sooner than you think.
He I has think so, very, too.
A lot of, which is not to say, and then we'll get in and start lecturing them on their gender privilege.
Oh.
You know, the Democrats need to turn themselves inside out and figure out what the fuck they stand for.
That's true, too.
But I think that I don't think a lot of people held their nose and voted for him. Mm-hmm. I talked to people that decided in the booth who to vote for.
You what?
You know, it was never a question of who you're going to, you're very committed to who you're going to vote for. There are people that got into the booth not knowing who they're going to vote for.
That's insane.
And when they're in the
God
booth,
damn it, I've been thinking about this for a couple of years.
When they're in the booth and the doors close, they think about how they're going to pay the bills. And that's, I think that they look past Trump's moral lapses as creepy shit that I don't want to think about it. Here's a not equal analogy, but not a false analogy. Mm-hmm. Bill Clinton with women, not great.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Oh yeah.
It's like, how can you be pro women? And I hear on the right all the time, you say you Trump's a sexist, you voted for Bill Clinton twice.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Well, they've been
and
involved.
I go, wait, look, there's a bird over there. How can you be talking to me that when that cloud looks so much like a dump truck?
Right.
No, so it's not an equal. I think Trump is much worse, but there's cognitive dissonance on both sides. People have ideological predilections, and they will look past the flaws of their own guy. That's just human nature.
We got a lot going on here. We really do have the best advanced college educational system. We have the best capital markets. We have the best rule of law in our courts and financial districts, which means we have capital to invest and create jobs. We have an abundance of natural resources, including enough oil to be self-sufficient. We have the best technology in the world, and we have an independent judiciary, which is not corrupt in any way. So as much as people want to say it's the apocalypse, the end of the world, country is pretty amazing and will keep going. And the question is, will Donald Trump rise to the occasion as a patriot, or he won't? And we have to wait and see. And if he doesn't, people like me who are conservatives, we will oppose him on principle where he ought to be opposed. And liberals who like him neither for what he does and for politics can oppose him too. You know, and there's a lot of things you can do. I'm tired of the marching right now because there should be a rule that if you put on the Che Guevara hipster t-shirt and go to the march looking for meeting girls, if you voted for Jill Stein, you should have to wear a big neon green dunce cap.
Yeah.
Because guess what? He won fair and square in our system.
Yes.
So in 4 years, we'll do it again. And, yes. You know, next time get up a little early on election day and work a little harder and decide that auto.
Yeah. I have no patience for people who voted on principle. You know, it's just, yeah. If you threw your vote away, you threw your vote away.
I voted third party. People have but they should think it through.
At the end of the day, the person that gets the most votes gets to do what they want.
Well, the person that gets the most electoral college votes.
Well, that's true. And that was, if I'm not mistaken, created to protect slave owners. Is that correct?
Well, no. What the Electoral College does is it, like the Senate in the original architecture of our democracy, it balances out regional interests because the Democrats tend to win a very small number of counties, but they're enormously big. They win L.A. County.
Yeah.
We win the state of South Dakota.
Right.
So there's an advantage for the Republicans in the Electoral College because it spreads the vote out in a lot of places. So the more geographically, wait for it, diverse your vote is, the better you do. Now, there's a movement on to change that. And there's a thing called the Multi-State Compact, which would not get rid of the Electoral College because that is a long, arduous constitutional path. But if all the states, and a bunch already have, but if every state signed on to this agreement, instead of giving all their electors to the winner of their state, the electors would be assigned in proportion to what vote you got. Mm-hmm. So the Electoral College would look a lot more like the popular vote. And that's an interesting reform because right now because the Democratic vote is so concentrated in so few places that have so many people, your vote's worth a little less in the Electoral College if you're in New York City than it is if you're in Kansas or even a, you know, Democratic state like Hawaii. So, you know, maybe this thing will modernize. It's an old system. So right now it's majority vote very important because the Electoral College normally follows that, but it's having your vote geographically diverse and in a lot of different places, more rural, more suburban, that has a little edge.
Right. Before I want to ask you a couple of questions about the Trump era. But first I want to talk about mutual bullshit owning. here's some bullshit from the left that I encountered and talking to conservatives. There were sometimes people would throw stuff at me to which I had no counter, which is, you know, you talk about the way he treats women, you know, that it's obscene the way he treats women. Bill Clinton, also very famous for not treating women too wonderfully.
But he was pro-choice, Dana, so it's okay.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, yes, you're right. I had no counter
yeah,
to it.
But in degrees, I mean, Trump.
No, I'm not comparing Bill Clinton to Trump. Yeah. I'm just saying, like,
the problem is Trump has been his own train wreck.
If I'm
going
to point
so
out
far.
Something wrong about someone, I like to also say, and you know what? Here's something wrong that we have done. I think we can agree that, let's say Donald Trump lost the Electoral College, but won the popular by close to 2 million votes. And then a week after the election, Hillary Clinton quietly settled a $25 million fraud case out of court. There would also be protests.
Oh, yeah. No, there'd be a complete howls. Absolutely. Yeah.
And there would be big calls from Fox News about the Electoral College really having to go.
Look, we've always had this symmetry of horribleness in our politics.
Yes.
I remember Hymetown with Jesse Jackson.
Absolutely.
You know, the problem with
absolutely.
Trump is.
What I meant was absolutely he was right.
No, I've seen your secret Klan room here, by the way. It's
He's
very
absolutely
impressive.
Right. Yeah. Continue.
But the problem is Trump has been such an outlier because he made such a complete sport of it. Look, I am a hired, paid, 30-year Republican goon. I've beat Democratic candidates for a living and thoroughly enjoyed it for many decades. It takes a lot for me not to be for the Republican guy.
Right.
I'm like a baseball manager with the Yankees who had to go quietly root for the Red Sox. I mean, this is Trump was a real outlier, you know. And so there are all those parallels to history of misbehavior. So anybody believes in this, you know, era of everybody is, you know, right off Mount Olympus running in snowpiercer. No, Bobby Kennedy perfected taping, and that's where Nixon got the idea. I mean, you can go on and on through our history. The problem is Trump made such a meal out of it during the
campaign. Andrew Johnson tried to slow walk the end of the Civil War.
Right.
He did not agree with anything that Abe Lincoln said.
It's just Trump really took it to a new level and showed a lack of character to be president.
Yeah,
and
there's, right no historic, now in the, there's no historical precedent. There's no historical precedent for someone as just on the surface goonish as Donald Trump.
Well, yeah, just in so many dimensions. And look, he put race back into the equation, which we'd managed to push out of American politics to everybody's credit. Trump broke a lot of the rules of civilized, which are pretty permissive rules in our politics.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's an indelible stain that only he can remove through his action as president. So we'll see what he does. I'm not optimistic, but you know, can hold out a little hope. You know who I blame the most, by the way? Andy Cohen. I've decided I'm going to put the whole Trump thing on Andy Cohen.
And Andy Cohen is?
Andy Cohen is a television executive who I don't know and have never met, who is also on camera talent at Bravo.
Oh, that idiot?
Yes.
I thought you were talking about him. Like,
No.
Why are you talking about him?
For just being the P.T. Barnum of this tawdry reality television show where adults are slap fighting, you know, they get them all drunk, and just that cheap reality show TV culture that like a cancer has spread through everything in pop culture.
I didn't know he was
Andy,
the guy who really kicked it off.
Yeah, he was the creative executive who thought, hey, we'll get a bunch of kind of people who are dying to be on television. We'll get them drunk and make them fight and scream and bleep, and we'll put it on television and charge admission. You know, I understand the commerce, but in terms of cultural criminals of the last 10 years, he's
I'm certainly no fan. That's I'll take
and Fred
that.
Trump. You know, if I had a time machine, I would not take care of Hitler's baby. I'd leave it to others. I'd leave the blueprints around. I'd go back and tell Fred Trump not to be such an asshole to his kid.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's my concern about a President Trump, because you talk about, you know, it's a stain on his candidate, on his presidency.
Well, it's a stain on his character.
Yeah.
It is still possible for Trump to have a good presidency.
He could astound us all, and we
but it's on him. He's the only guy with the tools to do it, because it's his sins he has to atone for.
I've seen no evidence of that ability. To me, when you say that, my take on Donald Trump is that he doesn't care. I would bet a good amount of money that he is a clinical narcissist bordering on sociopath.
But that still puts him in the White House pretty easily. There are about a dozen.
But the lack of empathy is what is what gets me. Like, I really don't think he cares about anything outside of Donald Trump and the little mirrors around him that are his family.
He does seem to have a weird way to respond to any criticism immediately, which is not the kind of trait you want in a president.
Of the textbook of, clinical narcissism. Yeah. Cannot.
My test for Trump is how fast it takes him to arrest Pepitone. And frankly, the quicker the better, as far as I'm concerned. But,
and that is the fear, I think, of, you know, when you talk to a lot of people, and when, you know, if I spend too much time on Twitter or in any other place where that is, any other internet room where only the best in people is brought out, the people see the deportation squads coming, and then the anti-gay squads coming, and the squads coming.
There is a risk of kind of self and.
And people fear Pence as much as Trump in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, there is a risk.
And by the way, if you just showed anybody a picture of Pence, they go, "Oh, who's that old gay guy?"
Yeah. He'll be fine. There is a risk of self-aggrandizement here.
Yeah.
Which is, we all link hands and reassert our moral superiority and get ready for the stormtroopers. I don't think it'll be that bad. You know what I'm really happy about? The domestic policy era of Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan. Because we have the most powerful institution. It's not the presidency in domestic policy. It's the Congress. So they're going to do a whole lot of stuff that I think is going to be great for the country. So that's what I'm happy about.
I think a lot of people voted for Trump that were more voting against Hillary Clinton than voting for Trump. Over 1 million people voted for Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump in the popular vote.
Right. It's over 1 million, right?
Yeah.
And also, by the way,
The point I'm making is he actually, in terms of public opinion, has very, very little rope. And I think that if he doesn't deliver, he will hear it quickly.
Do you know a guy named Greg Palast, who's a lefty? You know Greg Palast?
No, I've read all the political
writings. The best
money
democracy can buy.
I've read all the political writings of Craig Bierko.
Oh, he's a sweet guy. But
I like Craig.
The
best democracy money can buy.
Well, that's one of his books. He's an expat. He lives in London, and he does stuff for BBC. And one of the things he did, you're talking about Trump not winning the popular vote. Not only that, but he talks about how the Republicans got a lot of African Americans off the voter rolls in these states that Trump won by very small margins.
Yep.
Michigan, I think Arizona, and maybe Pennsylvania. But he really didn't even win those he really didn't even win those states, counting the people who were purged from the voting rolls.
Right.
You know, kinds of dirty, dirty,
yeah, but there was
dirty
also,
tricks.
There's also 76,000 people in Michigan who voted for Obama that didn't vote for Clinton. And that would have flipped the state. You know, there's something else going on there.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you. I agree with you. I'm just saying, to your point, that Trump has very little rope.
Yeah, he has very little rope. But, you know, here's the thing. We don't know. That's sort of the thrilling thing. I have no fucking idea what's going to happen. I certainly didn't anticipate what was going to happen the night of the election. And I was told by a lot of smart people I knew what was going to happen. So I'm trying to not.
They don't look so fucking smart now, do they?
No, and I'm trying not to overreact and panic and just because I talk to smart people that aren't freaked out. So I'm like, all right, well, you're smart. You're not freaked out. I'm freaked out.
Me too. But, me too. I'm also the same camp of like, okay, what good is it going to do to be freaked out?
None.
You know, second of all, my big thing, my big thing is that this is gonna wake up a lot of people. I mean, you just talked about, well, I'm never going to be in that fucking media bubble again. Yep. And I think that's great.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Because if Clinton would have won, you would have been. You would have been just like swimming along with Rachel fucking Maddow.
Yeah. And you know, and here's another thing. So I voted for Clinton, mm-hmm. and I lost. Mm-hmm. And my brother voted for Trump, mm-hmm. and he won. Mm. After the election, I unplugged from MSNBC and the Huffington Post, and he did not unplug from Fox and Drudge.
He didn't.
No. And since then, he is still furious.
Over?
And I'm not.
Is that right?
Yeah. Because I'm concerned, but I'm not in a hysterical panic.
Because the news medias, they exist.
I pulled out my hysteria drip.
Yeah.
You know? Exactly. He's like, all the protesters are anarchists paid by George Soros. And like, I don't know what bullshit's been poured into your head today, but.
Do you talk? Yeah. And what does he say when you, do you tell him, tell him exactly that or you don't even address
it? No, I guess.
You can't talk to it.
Yeah. You can't argue with that. It's because it's too emotional. It's
what did you say? I'll come over there and kill you.
It's based in
emotion. Right, I agree with you.
It's so emotional. You know, it's their job to tell you who's what the disaster of the hour is. There's a different disaster every hour, and you just get disaster fatigue.
By the way, that's what I'm afraid of. By the way, what you just mentioned is Fox News and Trump tweeted out. He called them. On his tweet, he's a great tweeter. He called them on his tweet, Donald Trump, professional protest stoked by the media, just what you said about Fox News. And what I'm scared is that, you know, when he gets in power, he's going to really start mass arresting people, getting very heavy handed with the police. And I think the protests are just going to go on and on. I've been very encouraged by the protests, because I feel like the only way we can combat a guy like Trump and why is he protestable even before he's taken control is the people he's picking mm-hmm. around him are disgusting so far.
Yeah.
Bannon is a fucking anti-Semite.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Sessions.
Yeah, I know.
He picked
a lunatic.
These are people who need to be protested.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think the protests
are
great.
So I'm worried that he is going to have this authoritarian.
Here's mm-hmm. what I think about the protests. Mm-hmm. I think that if you are concerned about his policies and you want to loudly proclaim that you are against that and you are for a more inclusive society or what have you, then you protest. If you didn't want him to be the president and now he's the president and you want to go out in the street and say, he's not my president, I didn't vote for him, that's no reason. You're wasting everybody's time.
Mm.
That's just – you're a sore loser. And you're just as bad as the birthers looking for a reason to not accept election results you don't want to accept. You need to find out why you're fucking out there and articulate it. And yeah. I'll support you and I'll march with you. But people who don't – you know – people who finally got some bad news and they don't want to accept it, so they're flying into denial, I have no fucking sympathy for you.
Yeah, but what about protesting who he's picking?
Great, love it. I'm right there. Just not my president is not enough.
Mm.
I don't like him. I voted for the other guy. Tough. He won. That's the system. You don't want to live in a democratic republic. You want to live in a totalitarian regime in which you are the totalitarian.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's interesting because I just have such a reaction to him. You know,
so do I.
You know,
so do I. But it's bigger than him. The job is bigger than him. Elections are bigger than any one man. And we have to remember what fucking country we live in and how this works. Part of being in a democratic republic is you also accept results that you don't like.
Right.
And then the other side accepts results that they don't like.
I wonder what would have happened if Trump lost and he would have, because he was
quoting, well, here's the deal. If Trump had won the popular vote by over a million and lost in the Electoral College, the roar from Fox News about dismantling the Electoral College would be deafening. It would be the only thing in the news. So, you know, the people that go like, they're pussies and they're just protesting because they don't like the results. Yes, as opposed to your pussies who would have protested a different result.
Right. Right.
But I'm all for protesting shit that actually has a purpose and a goal. And, you know, and you're not going to, you know, and, you know, I think that Trump is of the personality that the more you protest Steve Bannon, the more secure his job becomes. The more you protest Jeff Sessions, the more secure his job becomes. But that's not your concern. If you're upset and you're an American and you want your voice heard, you should get out there and protest. And eventually here, look, here's the person. The only person that can destroy Donald Trump is going into the White House with him. They're wearing the same pants. Donald Trump is the only person that can destroy Donald Trump. And he will. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, I think so. Hopefully he won't, you know, take us down with him.
I think he will. I see two.
His foreign. I mean, what is
I see
his?
Two things by the end of 4 years. The sun only shines 4 days a week, and there's a Taliban flag over the White House.
Now, here's my question. Will you still have a thriving career? Will Stand versus Evil still be on?
Stand Against Evil is
Stand Against Evil.
It's going to go
Sue
through,
me, by the way, for getting that wrong.
Through the roof. That's going to take off really
Stand
well.
Stand Against Evil might be the perfect outlet for everybody. Yeah. And by the way, Dana has paid me to bring up Stand Against Evil. This isn't, crisp, you know, in, this isn't organic.
Crisp money is heard exchanged.
This is an organic. This is not an organic conversation.
I don't know if he does. Well, does he have a parallel in presidential history?
I don't think so.
Andrew Johnson, maybe?
Someone who is inexperienced as him? Someone as incapable?
So not of presidential timber.
Yeah, I don't know. When the Johnson administration, I was busy writing a one-man show, so I have no idea what was going on.
That's when you were writing Pumpkins, Pumpkins, Pumpkins.
Yeah, it was seasonal show.
Pepitone skewed take on autumn. Pumpkins, Pumpkins, Pumpkins.
By the way, what is interesting, too, is that Clinton, Hillary, had all these celebrities. And you did mention it with Lena Dunham and Soloway. But we didn't talk about Bruce Springsteen, like huge celebrities, like Springsteen. And
I see people
De Niro.
That are.
Yeah, and no, imagine, I'm talking about now they've been dead silent since this.
I just imagine the family from Roseanne sitting in their kitchen. Mm. They're like, they've got a stack of like the unemployment check and they have food coupons and they're trying to, from a thousand different sources, sweep together a pile to make their monthly nut. And then the last question is, before we do that, who does Beyonce want?
Because even I got carried away in the Beyonce endorsement. I don't know if you saw it, but it was live during one of her shows. And Beyonce was in such a fetching – I don't know if you see what she performs in, but it's fetching.
No.
It's fetching, and that's a term – that my father used comely. To use.
Comely.
Come hither?
Comely.
Comely. That is a double. But
no, comely means attractive.
Yeah, I know.
It was also the name of the sidekick in the X-rated Tennessee Tuxedo cartoon.
But
threw down a Tennessee Tuxedo and Chumley reference.
The question is, will Trump, who I think is going to outsource most domestic policy to those guys, and caveat, liberals aren't going to like it, just like conservatives didn't like what Obama did.
But is there some truth? Because one of the things I hear on the left a lot is that Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan, and before Paul Ryan, it was John Boehner, did not do things that would have benefited the country because they didn't want to give Obama any win whatsoever.
No. What happened is Mitch said early that, hey, my job is to be the opposition here and, you know, fight the policy.
He said, my first job is to turn him into a one-term president. That's the famous quote.
Which is right out of the playbook of Mitch's predecessor, the Democratic leader, Tom Daschle. I was there in Washington, did exactly the same thing. That's the role of the Senate opposition. So much is made of that, which I think is way oversimplified. The ideological party with majority in the Senate will always oppose the presidency of the other power because they're going to disagree on everything.
Right.
And the idea that, see, the president was very shrewd.
Let me ask you this. Donald Trump wants to raise the debt limit. Will the Tea Party go berserk?
I think some will complain, but they'll go along.
Right. Whereas they wouldn't before.
Right. You know, exactly.
That increasing the deficit will not have the taboo on it that it did when Obama wanted to increase the deficit.
There will be a debate about it, but it won't have the partisan edge to it at all.
There was an infrastructure. To me, there's a big infrastructure spending package for infrastructure repair that Obama wanted to do that he couldn't get, that Trump will get because he has.
Well, I'm not sure. McConnell says he's against it. So we'll wait and see.
Yeah. Well, that's the theory.
And the Dems are going to flip on a bunch of stuff, too. Schumer's already said, we can look at some of that stuff.
To me,
if you're looking for complete ideological purity, regardless of who's in the White House, so the party doesn't apply, it doesn't exist. But there's some situational aspects to it, no doubt about it.
Well, see, I think it's admirable, frankly, that Schumer didn't say, well, our job is to make Donald Trump a one-term president.
Which is exactly what he believes and will do.
Yeah, but he didn't say it.
Yeah, then it's a matter of PR tactics.
Right,
so.
Yeah.
What worries me more about the Trump presidency is foreign policy. Uh-huh. Because that's where he has fairly little experience, some would say little knowledge, and he doesn't know many people, so God knows who he's going to staff with.
Right.
So, and that is where a president can make real mistakes. The two things that are the biggest worry to me are foreign policy. He doesn't understand the strength of our alliances that have built the Atlantic Alliance and kept the peace for 50 years.
No.
A, and B, he could start a trade war, which would quadruple the pain and misery for everybody who says he wants to help.
Yes. And there's also little things.
And he doesn't need Congress to do either of them.
No. And he, he wants to repair relationships with Russia. He is famously buddy-buddy with Vladimir Putin. A lot of people think that Vladimir Putin might have put his thumb on the scale of our election through Julian Assange. And so if he allies with Putin to defeat ISIS, which sounds like a good idea, but then you also go, does that mean that we then tacitly don't oppose Assad? And what does that say?
Well, but what Putin's doing is he's made the bet that a horrible, murderous dictator in Syria is better than ISIS. So we will help the murderous dictator, including murdering thousands of kids in Aleppo. I mean, murdering them. And so our policy, which has been stumblebum and too new, I go on forever about what I don't like about it, has been not to support Assad because we think an Assad future is no better than an ISIS future for Syria. But the Russians are running the table right now in Syria because of a lot of failures from the Obama administration. Putin may get his way because Trump may say, I don't care.
Right.
We'll let Syria become kind of a Russian backyard and maybe ISIS will fail there, though they'll move somewhere else. So,
yeah.
Trump, more than any president, needs experienced, smart people around him, and I'm waiting to see him appoint some.
Mike Flynn?
Mixed. So the Mike Flynn deal is he had a distinguished career in the military.
There's a Buck Turgidson element to Mike Flynn.
It's not. That's Mad Dog Mathis. He's a Marine general who's also going to get an appointment. But so the deal with Flynn's getting a little bit of a bad rap from the Miss Hathaways in the media.
I did watch him on Face the Nation, and I thought he seemed
so.
Like,
here's the plus and minus:
normal human being in terms of his ability to speak in public.
So Flynn, when he was head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, we have a bunch of these intel. Everybody thinks CIA, they're a squadron of these things.
Yeah.
He was a reformer to the point of irritation. It's a very hidebound institution, the military. Right. So he was the guy saying, why do we always do that? Why don't we do that? And so he rubbed a lot of the elite the wrong way. I kind of like those reform guys.
Yeah.
On the other hand, he had a lot of management problems there in terms of dealing with subordinates. And he rubbed the people to the extent of beyond making a point. So they fired him. And at that point, he kind of went a little bit angry. Mm-hmm. And so he went into the Trump orbit. He's been a loyal Trump supporter. He's no fool. But the job he has, national security advisor in the White House, that is a staff job, very powerful one. designed
originally
to
held by, it was
well, Kissinger Rice, had it.
Right, yeah. Condoleezza Rice was George Bush's originally. Yeah, Henry Kissinger was.
It really
both
grew.
Of those went on to Secretary of State.
It really grew in the Nixon administration because Nixon wanted his guy right there. He didn't really trust Rogers as Secretary of State. So, but that's a job where you're the honest broker between the various interest groups, the Pentagon, the Director of National Intelligence, people who touch the portfolio of foreign affairs. So Flynn is not really an honest broker kind of guy. He's a strong point of view kind of guy.
Right.
So it's not a great fit of job and person. Flynn also is very controversial, having been fired from his last job. And right. So there is great unease in the national security establishment, both parties, about this appointment. People would feel better if there were some other counterweights, but we don't really know who they are yet. There's been talk of Tennessee Senator Bob Corker, who would be an excellent Secretary of State, an excellent Secretary of Defense. So, you know, we don't, the pie's half cooked yet, but what a lot of people worry about, and I think worry about correctly, is Trump values loyalty, which is a good thing, but he only kind of knows a few people, and I wish he knew more
and
people.
And the A-team was not.
Yeah, no, it's not the A-team. Trump does not have the A-team.
Yeah.
So the question is, will he recruit the A-team, or will he have the J and K team, because that's who he knows.
Right.
That's the big question.
Yeah. Rudy Giuliani, not a great choice for Secretary of State.
No, not for that job.
Yeah, that's interesting. And
on the other hand, Betsy DeVos is a way out of the box choice for Secretary of Education, but she's worked in education reform. I know her for 15 years. She wouldn't be bad as Secretary of Education. So, you know, we got to see. Sarah Palin for Interior, I'm not crazy about that idea.
He's also talking to, she makes my skin crawl.
Well, they may appoint her just to irritate.
I look at all of these appointments as, like, to me, every appointment that he makes, to me, is Carswell for the Supreme Court. It's just like, this will piss them off. This will piss them off.
I worry with Bannon in his ear, a guy who, in my view, does not deserve to be in a White House.
No.
There's a little bit of this will drive him crazy, which is, that's hilarious in junior high. It's not so smart in the White House.
Yeah. And that, if you look at the big, you know, there's an element of the big neon distraction that you can get away with of a lot of everything else because everybody's howling at Steve Bannon. I saw that. I think it warrants a lot of attention that a man who said he was unjustly being persecuted by the New York district attorney suddenly quietly settles a $25 million fraud case and makes it all go away when he swore he would fight it because he was did nothing wrong.
No, it was clearly tactical. It was until when the minute he became president, he had to make it go away, so he wrote a $25 million check, which, by the way, the plaintiffs accepted.
Yes, they absolutely did. Yeah. But that disappeared because of a tweet about Hamilton. You know, so there's a way to – the cartoon distraction sometimes pulls people off the more
look, my advice to my liberal friends is take a vacation from politics so you don't have a nervous breakdown and see what kind of Trump you've got in 8 months.
Yeah.
Or 9 months or a year. And then if you don't like it, organize, work hard, get up early. You know, you get to go march on Washington, a million things you can do. But right now, working yourself into a frenzy about the conspiracies and the card tricks.
You're just going to be exhausted.
Yeah. It's just, you know, really want to make your head explode. It's a marathon, not a sprint.
Yeah, that's very important. And as I tell people, unplug from your ideological news source.
Completely. That's a big part of the problem.
Yeah. Stay off Facebook. Stay off Twitter.
Except for when I'm on MSNBC or NBC News. Then, of course, it's...
It can be. Let it be the salt to your information diet, but it should not be the main course.
More to come from the Dana Gould Hour.
It's coming. Here it comes. It's intermission time. Time to visit our concession stand.
Hot dog.
Hot dog? Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. The hot dogs at our concession stand do rate an appreciative whistle.
As we enter this new and exciting period in our nation's history, it's important to remember that the United States of America is, at its heart, an experiment. The great experiment, as Alexis de Tocqueville, the French historian, said when describing America's ascent in the 1800s. And so, If America is an experiment, then its growth and progress will most probably proceed the way any experiments does, through trial and error. Although the preamble to the Constitution says our goal is to form a more perfect union, which I know from Schoolhouse Rock, it's also important to keep in mind that we are far, far, far from perfect. From our very inception, there was a whiff of bullshit in the air. Let's go from de Tocqueville to the great American cultural critic, George Carlin.
This country was founded by a group of slave owners who told us that all men are created equal. That is what's known as being stunningly, stunningly full of shit.
So yeah, there's that. Our history is pockmarked with diseased blanket sales and slave auctions, so there's room for more perfect, I think. But of course, this belief runs up against an old notion, an old idea that has, in a way, had its meaning perverted over time, and that is the belief in American exceptionalism. Now, the initial meaning of American exceptionalism was that America was unique in the world. Then in the long road of history, nothing but nothing came close to Uncle Sam. We're a representative democracy that celebrates individualism and has a capitalist economy. Nice, all good. Not stridently unique. Abe Lincoln said American exceptionalism also implied that we have a duty to transform the globe. As stated in the Gettysburg Address, Americans were here to ensure that, quote, government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth, unquote. Okay. But it wasn't until Reagan that American exceptionalism took on the meaning that many people associate with it today. That no matter what we do, because we're America, we're automatically the best. We are, as John Winthrop, a Puritan and first governor of the Massachusetts Bay Colony, said, we are like that shining city on a hill. Now, the origin of that phrase comes from the Sermon on the Mount. In the parable of salt and light, Jesus said, you are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. John Winthrop saw America as that shining city on a hill. And Ronald Reagan, at the very end of his second term, in his farewell address to the nation, invoked that imagery, and Winthrop himself.
The past few days, when I've been at that window upstairs, I've thought a bit of the shining city upon a hill. The phrase comes from John Winthrop, who wrote it to describe the America he imagined. What he imagined was important because he was an early pilgrim, an early freedom man. He journeyed here on what today we'd call a little wooden boat. And like the other pilgrims, he was looking for a home that would be free.
Here are some fun facts. John Winthrop was a Puritan who felt that only certain high-born individuals and officers of the church should ever be allowed to vote. He despised the very concept of democracy, calling it the meanest and worst of all forms of government. And he quite famously executed not only his share of witches, but also a fair share of Quakers. He was an early freedom man. But this concept of American exceptionalism, that we are somehow by nature of our very being special, sacred, superior, is, in my opinion, really dangerous. You show me someone who thinks that they're naturally superior to everyone else just by nature of their ability to wake up in the morning and be who they are, and I'll show you someone who will never, ever try to improve himself. Certainly the phrase American exceptionalism sounds less crazy than what it's implying. We're God's favorite country. And I know this may shock you, but if you can believe it, there are other countries on the globe who actually have the audacity to think that they're exceptional. No, it's true. Western Europeans believed in the Great Divergence, referring to how the countries of Western Europe emerged during the 1800s as the most powerful and wealthy world civilization of all time. The Whig History in Britain, W-H-I-G, maintained that the political system of the British Empire was the apex of human development. Sinocentrism is the belief that China is the cultural center of the world. As far as the presidency was concerned, the founding fathers were queasy about investing any one person with that much power. As designed, the legislative branch of government holds far more sway than the executive. But over time, power shifted to the point that those two branches are by now more or less equal. Now,
Donald Trump may very well be a historical anomaly, or an historical anomaly. He's an aberration. He is certainly the first president in our history to gain notoriety from hosting what is basically a game show. But he is not, I repeat, not, the first occupant of the Oval Office to waltz in with his mental six guns blazing crazy. James Buchanan is widely considered one of our worst presidents. Buchanan was president right before Abraham Lincoln, and although the seeds of the Civil War had already started to sprout, Buchanan seemed to not know or care. In his inaugural address, he called the territorial issue of slavery, quote, happily, a matter of but little practical importance, end quote. For his re-election, Buchanan ran against Abraham Lincoln and lost, but Lincoln could not take office until March of 1861. 3 months after the election, with Buchanan still in office, though a lame duck, seven states had already left the Union. In his final State of the Union address, he said that the secessionist states were acting illegally, but that the federal government lacked the power to prevent it. As the situation worsened, Buchanan continued to do nothing, giving the South time to organize and giving half his cabinet reason to resign. But Buchanan was not the only dud. After Lincoln came in and cleaned up the mess, and we all know the thanks he got, Andrew Johnson stepped in to succeed him in the Oval Office. Johnson was appointed by Lincoln as his running mate after serving as the military governor of Tennessee. But in the aftermath of the war, during Johnson's ascension to power, it became apparent that, unlike Lincoln, Johnson didn't really give a shit about black people. His feeling was that, after the Civil War, African Americans would basically go back to being, in his words, not citizens, but serfs. In other words, still slaves, pretty much, just not with that terrible title. His attitude towards Reconstruction was lenient to the point of derelict. Many Southern states quickly elected new governments and installed black codes, measures designed to control and repress recently freed slaves. The enraged Congress refused to seat many of the new Southern members. That same year, when Congress passed the 14th Amendment, granting citizenship to blacks, Johnson urged the Southern states not to ratify it. His attempt failed. In February of 1868, the House voted to impeach him. The Senate failed to acquit him by one vote. William Henry Harrison took the oath of office in March of 1841. It was a cold, wet day, but William Henry Harrison stood outside in it, delivering a brutal 2-hour inaugural address without an overcoat on. He then caught pneumonia and died a month later. Warren Harding was utterly corrupt, played poker while his cronies looted the U.S. Treasury. He had several affairs, a child out of wedlock with a woman named Nan Britton, 31 years his junior, and he called his penis Jerry. Woodrow Wilson was a dedicated racist who was enthusiastically pro-segregation and thought that criminals and the mentally disabled should be sterilized. When Richard Nixon was a young man, he fancied a girl named Pat Ryan. He asked her out. She said no. So he offered to drive her on her dates with other guys. She said yes. He did. They later married. Oddly, Richard Nixon always seemed angry. Jackie Kennedy lost the first child she carried in her marriage to John F. Kennedy in August of 1956. JFK was on a Mediterranean yachting cruise at the time, and it apparently never entered his mind to rush back and be with his wife in her hour of need. Not until his friends explained how the public shame over his absence would tarnish him forever in the eyes of women voters did he head home. As Kennedy's friend George Smathers bluntly advised, you better haul ass back to your wife if you ever want to run for president. And on it goes. See Abing Gray by the Ussy Pay.
When you're born in this world, you're given a ticket to the freak show. And when you're born in America, you're given a front row seat.
Now, say you want to read up on some of this stuff, if only to put our current squalid display into some form of historical context. Well, there's a world of amazing books. I'm sure this comes as no surprise. I would recommend anything by David McCulloch, especially the books John Adams, 1776, and Truman. Team of Rivals by Doris Kearns Goodwin is fascinating. The People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn. I also liked Lies My Teacher Told Me by James Lowen. If you really want to know how America got to be America, read The Federalist Papers by Alexander Hamilton. and Democracy in America by Alexis de Tocqueville. And last but not least, I heartily recommend Common Sense by Thomas Paine. But how do you get these into your grubby little hands? You clickety-clack your keyboard to danagould.com. Click on our Amazon banner and shop away. You get what you want, and for no extra charge, we get a couple extra beans to keep the lights on around here. Also, on the homepage of danagould.com, you'll see options to donate to the show or subscribe through PayPal. Every cent goes back into the show. Please know we appreciate what, if anything, you can give. But that's not all. You can also visit our store at comedyfilmnerds.com. We have Bevel Aqua Heating and Air Conditioning t-shirts, Dana Gould Hour t-shirts, signed vinyl copies of Funhouse, Let Me Put My Thoughts in You, and soon, I Know It's Wrong. Signed CDs, signed DVDs, Dana Gould Hour posters, all signed by me, just in time for your holiday gift giving. All available at store.comedyfilmnerds.com.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Whew! After all that shameless pimping, I think I need to lie down. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the average price. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing that savings directly to the consumer. The Casper mattress is an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. Mattresses can often cost well over $1,500. But Casper mattresses cost just $500 for a twin-sized mattress and $950 for a king-sized mattress. It combines springy latex and supportive memory foams to create an award-winning sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. And all Casper mattresses are made in America. Time magazine named it one of the best inventions of 2015, an award-winning mattress that won't disappoint. Try Casper for 100 nights, risk-free in your own home. If you don't love it, they'll pick it up and refund you everything. Free shipping and returns to the U.S. and Canada. Get $50 now towards any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/Dana and using the promo code Dana. Now, go seeps.
Sure, you get yours and enjoy it now.
And now, on with the show.
I just want to talk about Springsteen for 1 second.
Ed Springsteen?
Not Bruce, Ed. He's got a bad spine. No, Bruce Springsteen supposedly is this guy who is so connected. All his music is about working class people who are struggling, you know? I don't know. Not so
much.
And he fills up stadiums all over the fucking country, not to mention the world, but I mean, all over the country. Is there, you know, I mean, you know what? I admire.
I'm on this train of thought. Bob Dylan fascinates me.
I also love Dylan.
He's not, but what's amazing is he said it, and I said this the day after the election. The point that I took the day after the election is this is not the death of hope. I think back to that famous quote of Gandhi that Obama used to say that Ed pointed out to me was not Obama, but Gandhi, because I went to UMass. I didn't know.
I went to the College of Staten Island. We have a rich intellectual tradition that is only interrupted by people storming the campus with baseball bats.
like the gangs in the Warriors wearing full makeup. Like so many murderous gangs. All right, guys, we're going to kill some people. Let's put on our makeup. But no, the point was that you have to be the change you want, and that the Shepherd Fairy Hope poster should have your face here over Obama's, because that's what people need to think. Say, yeah, you've got to go and you've got to do. And that's what Dylan said was, don't follow leaders, watch your parking meters, do your own shit on the street. And that's how change will happen. And what, you know, when you get these creeps like Jeff Sessions and Steve Bannon and all these people, the people have to lead. Obama didn't support same-sex marriage until enough people did.
Yeah.
And then he suddenly led on the issue.
I didn't even.
You know, and that's, I think that's, you know, yeah, they'll try some creepy shit and the people have people have to stand up and follow their beliefs. That's the, look.
Yeah.
If you protest Steve Bannon because you don't want an anti-Semite with the ear of the president or something, and you want to protest that, great. If you want to protest Donald Trump's appointment of Steve Bannon as an advisor, great. Mm-hmm. I will drive you. Mm. If you want to protest Donald Trump because he won and I don't want him to be the president, so I'm going to throw a tantrum, I got no time for it.
I hear you, but he did win running on a very misogynistic, xenophobic platform, and that's what people are react. They're scared. Right. You know what?
They're fucking scared. Then protest that. Protest. Yeah. You know what? How do you think that his feelings? How do you think his feelings are going to find their way into law? And protest that. No deportation force. No, but you know. Mm. Otherwise, you're barking at a cloud.
I mean, he talked about he is. I thought he did a 60-minute interview rather recently. Did you read any of that shit?
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you he talked about, I believe,
Barron Trump might be the sexiest 10-year-old on the face of the earth.
I'm going to pretend I didn't hear that.
No, Barron Trump really does look like the poster for The Omen. He really just has that. He just has that kind of, my daddy says you're a bad man.
Oh, man.
He really does have that.
What was I going to say? What was I talking about? Where am I?
Interview on 60 Minutes.
Oh, right. He talked about, I think, possibly repealing Roe versus Wade. Now, if that shit...
He will try.
If he tries that, there's going to be just massive, massive protests.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
taking women's right to have an abortion away at the federal level is something that you're fucking, you know, he shouldn't fuck with that.
No, but, and I don't know, I think if he get, if
Pence is such a fucking, you know.
If Ruth Bader Ginsburg croaks or retires and he gets two things, yeah, then a case, an abortion case will go, I don't know if it's going to be overturned, but I think it will be consistently eroded and consistently eroded. And then the worst possible thing is it goes back to the states. And then, yeah.
What's going to happen there?
We have to be able, there needs to be a white van that will drive to your state and make sure that you get access to the healthcare that you need. And then it will, and after, I will tell you, after he overturns Roe v. Wade, for a while, the conservatives are fucked because they will have had their victory.
Yeah.
They will get lazy and cocky. The progressives will have something to run against and they'll bulldoze them and it will change a little bit. That's the nature of our system. And then the progressives will get lazy and cocky and the conservatives will come back.
The only thing is,
I'm not saying I celebrate it. I hope it doesn't happen.
Well, what I think is wrong with
that. But I have no faith in anything anymore. I don't.
Good night.
Yeah. Life is short.
Hello, I'm Jean-Paul Sartre. And I'm Albert Camus. And our podcast today is called Wow. I think I killed
I'm Jean-Paul Sartre. And I'm Albert Camus. And this is the AV Club. Are you watching?
Well, the only thing wrong with the way you describe
Big Bang Theory.
The only thing, God, I got a kick out of the Big Bang Theory.
I love nerds.
Those guys.
Nerds are so funny to me.
Nerds, yeah.
Oh, nerd. They're all smart nerds.
Yes.
They're nerds.
The nerds are great.
Oh, God, nerds.
And what a force for change they have been.
I like how they wear pocket protectors because they're nerds.
The only thing wrong with the picture you just said about how our system works is that for the people that you were describing earlier, fucking working those horrible jobs and trying to get the nut together for the week and having no health care, it's got to work quicker. And I think there's going to be, you know what I mean? It can't be just, oh, and then, you know, down the road, it'll be like, oh, there'll be a little change. And that's how our system works.
Right.
I think
here's one thing that will happen that'd be good for
working. That's almost cruel in a way.
Here's one thing that will happen for working people. Donald Trump will get a massive investment package to rebuild infrastructure that they would not give to Obama because they didn't want to give anything to Obama.
Right.
So they were withholding.
Well, we need our infrastructure rebuilt. Right. So that's a good thing.
That is a good thing. And people and white men will go to work.
That's a really good thing,
and
because they're pissed off.
Yeah, but that's, you know, and that will work. Now, the dirty fact of the matter is they could have gone to work 8 years ago, but they didn't want to give Obama the victory. So they suffered.
Yeah.
And
now
they suffered.
Yeah.
And they suffered until the president was a Republican. And then they're allowed to work. And that's the truth, Ruth. But I'm glad they're going to work. And that will be, for the first 2 years, I think he'll be pretty popular. Because people will get jobs and they'll see some immediate relief. If they don't see immediate relief, not going to last long.
So what is the betrayal we're talking about then? I mean,
in large, I don't think, that they'll get that infrastructure. And then now what? I don't know.
Right.
Be just enough to get him into a second term.
Beware the psychology of traveling in your own herd. So you're in a constant auction about what a better person you are, these imaginary villainous, you know, people who voted for Trump and how you're going to hate them and everything. Just take the rage out of it. It's only politics. We do have a system with some checks and balances. And every 4 years, it's like a car lease. You get another one. So, you know, it's not worth having a stroke over.
Yes.
And if it gets that bad, I'll be on the barricade line with everybody else, because there are a lot of Republicans like me who want Republican policy to get enacted to make the country better. So we're going to support President-elect Trump when he's right, but we're not afraid to oppose him when he's wrong.
Yeah. Now, do you think that, for all of these people that voted for Obama that then voted for Trump, and there are many.
There are some, but yeah.
That didn't or did not vote. You know, do you think that now he's their guy, and, you know, what will it take for them? What will it take for the electorate to turn its back on an incumbent president? Or does he?
Well, in the modern era,
I look at him as somebody who lost by close to 2 million in the popular vote. A lot of people held their nose and voted for him. A lot of people voted against Hillary Clinton. How much rope does he have?
Not a lot. I mean, we're in a politics now where people abandon quickly.
Yeah.
So he's got a lot of promises. Well, I don't know about promises to keep on policy, because there really was no policy during the campaign. But he's got to deliver some of the new country he promised, and he's got to do it in a style that's a little more unifying, or his numbers are going to crater totally and he'll be gone. The other thing is, I know for pretty much a fact that nobody in America was more surprised that Donald J. Trump won than Donald J. Trump on election night.
Yeah.
So now he's coming to grips of actually doing the job. It's a lot easier to fly around like you're a traveling ice capades company and do the rallies.
Right.
Now he's in a very different world, and President Obama said this, it has a way of clearing your mind and making things serious. But I'm not sure he may bore of this life. I'm not sure he'll, you know, voluntarily stay there the full 4 years. We'll see.
Really?
I think he wants to be a success, and he'll try.
The
question
is, you think he would?
I'm totally speculating here, but I'm not sure.
I hear that from
other
people.
He's the dog that caught the car.
Yes, that's the perfect way to put it. I've never heard it put better. He is the dog that caught the car.
Let's mix in a bed of applause right here.
I will, absolutely.
Savor this moment.
That is absolutely,
we will see.
Right. It's the movie The Candidate. It's What Now?
Yeah.
And I'm sure there is, like, hey, I want to go get a no.
Yeah.
I want to go over here.
I want to live in my tower. No.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
there was a rumor, I don't know if this is true, he has a neighbor in Trump Tower that he was having a party.
Mm-hmm.
This is a rumor, but, you know, they were going in. He was like, let's go in for a drink. And the Secret Service said, no, you can't go in there.
Well, they can't compel him. But generally, you know, presidents listen to, there's going to be some new stresses here.
Yeah.
Because we've never had anybody with such an outsized lifestyle that will have to be curbed into the regular security world. And boy, God help anybody who lives in that part of Midtown Manhattan. It's mostly business and retail, but,
how much are those stores? What is the rent on like the Gucci store across the street?
It's tremendous.
It's like $100,000 a month.
Well, and the taxpayers are going to foot the bill for trying to create a security perimeter on the weekends.
$1 million a week or $1 million?
No, much more.
I think it's $1 million a day.
Yeah. No. It is. There's a massive machine behind all this security stuff.
He has to. He can't live in Trump Tower.
He can't live there full time. He can probably visit, but it's going to be a huge deal. So we'll see. I do think he wants love, and he's a salesman. So I wouldn't underestimate it. He doesn't have a lot of ideological compass. So people think, oh, he's a dangerous right-wing nut. Liberals who think this. No, I think he's a demagogue, but I think he wants popularity. So I think he has a few surprises in store for what he actually does as president that may get him in trouble with the movement right.
Yeah, well, that would be, you know, because everything about him has been the opposite of what you would think would happen. To me, it would be the last ultimate irony that the movement right is what took him down.
Yeah, that would be.
You know, they're already angry at him because he's not throwing his political opponent in jail.
Well, the other problem he's got, which every president has, but nobody in his transition team thought he was going to win, so they didn't really do any of the work.
Right.
Now they've got 4,000 jobs they got to fill. Half of which are really important to the day-to-day running of government. And the irony is, until they fill them, the Obama people will probably stay around running the government.
Right.
And so he's got to survive a very tough job. We're just dealing with the hourly incoming is hard enough.
Yeah.
Let alone trying to change anything or move your agenda. And he's got to staff the machine to be able to do that basic stuff. And that's going to be hard for them.
Ego, but I don't, this is just armchair quarterback, but like, I don't think he has the attention span to do it or the ego to let anybody else do it.
Well, we'll see. You know, people who work for him say he does delegate, and that's a good thing in a president.
Yeah.
So my guess is he'll get deeply into the color bricks on the wall,
right,
or whatever, a few of his signature things. But the rest of it, I think on domestic policy, he's going to let Ryan and McConnell kind of lead the way, and they both know what to do, and they're ideological, and it'll be, from my point of view, great. And we're undo a lot of kooky Obama stuff.
Right.
Cut to, I'm going to write Dana a letter now. No more of these goddamn Republicans.
No, this is what I want to hear that.
Give
me an example of something that.
Hey, Ryan, rewrite the tax code for growth.
What is it about the tax code? Just so people understand, to get it out of the Red Sox and the Yankees for a minute. What is something about the tax code as it stands now that could change that would benefit working Americans? And how would that happen?
Well, the biggest generic theory, because there are differences, is that a pro-growth tax code that would get our economic growth about 25% higher than it is now. In other words, take it from an anemic 2% up to 2.8 or, you know, 30% up to 3%. As the economy grows, the demand for labor grows. And when the demand for something grows, what happens to the price? Goes up.
Right.
You got to bid more to get, you know, there's more demand and that drives up wages, and that would be a very good thing.
And there's also the theory that if you give a pro-growth tax rate, what happens is the people that run the corporation take that money, keep it, and everybody else remains.
Right. See, this is the big Bernie Sanders fallacy. There's a room called corporate profits with gold coins,
right,
and a guy with a Monopoly top hat shoveling it, laughing it. But this liberal notion that corporate profits are like in a room somewhere being hoarded is wrong.
I don't know if they can bring back jobs that are now done by a machine.
Yeah, right.
You know, have you seen an auto plant lately? There's like three people that work there.
Oh my God. Deindustrialization. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mechanization.
Yeah.
Comics. I mean, how we would be more up in arms if comics were just droids, like, and
sure,
they were alt droids. Like, I'm not talking about just a comic who's like, you know, good evening,
right,
you know, and just hack, but a brilliant alt comedian.
Have you seen
my factory is bullshit. I want feelings.
Have you seen
a brilliant bit, by the way? The droid.
Right, the alt droid.
The alt droid,
yeah,
who is screaming about his upbringing.
It has a, it's an interesting, because it's a computer, but it wears a hoodie, a vintage video game t-shirt, and track shoes. But Comedy Central wouldn't let them on the Meltdown because it was an older model droid. Well, do you have any droids that are younger?
What do you think of this droid?
It looks a little old.
How old is it?
6 months. No.
Forget it.
We have new ones coming out.
That's not our demo.
He's out of touch.
Oh, man.
You see just droids sitting around being bitter about the fact that they're over a year and a half old.
I have you seen the TSM-520s? They are so fucking clueless. Why am I sitting here on my ass while the TS-15s are on all the shows, including at midnight? Ever since the TS-5s have come out, I can't get on at midnight. Every night it's Nikki Glaser and an M25 unit.
Those droids are just sitting around playing poker. You know?
I can't believe it. I'm only watching MeTV now.
It relaxes me.
I only like shows I remember.
It relaxes me.
It just one of the droids is just stuck in That's All He Says.
It relaxes me.
It relaxes me.
It relaxes me.
I'm writing a spec Marin.
Is there anything good on? No, Broad City. That's good, supposedly.
Is it?
I hear Broad City's very funny.
I never saw it.
I hear Broad City's very funny.
Jeff just shook his hand to the right and left. The meh.
I like At Midnight.
Saturday Night Live is really hitting its stride. What'd you think of that fucking bullshit of Kate McKinnon? It actually was, you know, I am a sucker for such sentimentalism, and my wife is not. It's hilarious because I watched the video. I never watch SNL,
right.
But I watched the video of Kate McKinnon singing Hallelujah.
Yeah.
And I started crying.
Oh, no. Well, that's
my wife.
Well, that song will
like,
make you
what the fuck?
Well, yeah. Well, it's like poor Leonard Cohen died. You know, and that song will make you cry. There's something about
it's a beautiful song.
There's something about just the physical assemblage of the notes that pulls an emotional response out of you. It would make a fire hydrant cry. I don't know how it does it. And no, I thought that was weird. I thought that I really liked Chappelle's monologue.
Oh, yeah. Then, yeah. Yeah.
And then the show seemed to,
even though we talked about how rich he was, it's just to me, it was like he was basically, I like Chappelle. I mean, he's fucking brilliant, but he also was during that monologue that was confusing to me, talking about how rich he was.
Yeah.
So he's completely disconnected from the people he says he's representing. But, it's just like.
But they don't see it that way because they see themselves, they'll be rich some. They'll be rich
soon. That's very true.
Yeah. We
that's
just have,
very true.
Yeah. People don't. They're not ashamed of being poor. They're just temporarily not rich.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody's going to be a star, which is I found out to be very difficult.
I wanted to be really famous.
Take it from me, kids. I go around high schools going, look. Oh, everybody told me I was very funny.
Recovering.
As a matter of fact, the people in power told me, we love you to death.
A recovering fame addict.
Look, kids,
dude, that's
you're going to go to parties. People are going to offer you to be in a YouTube video. They're going to offer to put you in a...
Recovering fame addict is great.
In a Snapchat video.
That's a great
It's bit. A gateway drug. The next thing you know, your Instagram is nothing but selfies. It's dump smash videos of you dancing around your office.
By the way,
it's a one-way trip to Noahsville, kids.
By the way, you know, that is a brilliant bit, and it does address the point that young people are so fucking narcissistic and self-absorbed, but I've been encouraged by how political I think they've been since this election, and I may have misjudged the fucking millennials.
I don't know. There's a lot of eye-rolling naivete, but, you know, by and large, I think, and I said this to a bunch of conservatives, like, look, their big thing is they want a more inclusive society. That's the big thing. They don't want minorities scapegoated. I think that's. Right. I don't think that's the worst thing in the world to march over.
Absolutely.
You know, no one is marching over Trump's corporate tax policy.
Yeah.
No one is marching over Trump's decision to roll back regulations. What they're marching over is at some point.
Well, I don't know.
After maybe around Roosevelt,
mm-hmm.
the presidency became the national dad. And you vote for who you see in the mirror, and they don't want to see Donald Trump in the mirror.
Good point.
That said, I don't think they voted for Hillary Clinton because that's who they wanted to see in the mirror. They voted for Hillary Clinton because they really didn't want to see Donald Trump in the mirror.
Right. And but also we didn't address what you're talking about too, but the fact that he's a climate denier is very scary
to me
and the future generations.
Yeah.
There was a fucking news item. Have you heard this? The North Pole is 36 degrees warmer this year. 36. And scientists are going, what the fuck is going on?
Really?
Yeah. 36 degrees warmer. I think it's real scary.
Yeah.
Real scary. People don't really talk about – I mean, obviously, you know, he's a climate denier, which is fucked. But that is a huge issue. It's a huge issue.
I don't see. Here's
the thing. We're talking about LGBT issues.
Yeah, that's what
there's going to be fucking coastal flooding in your kid's lifetime.
Yes,
which is going to be if you think the refugee crisis now, and I know you rail about it. If you think the refugee crisis now is bad with people fleeing the endless wars that are going on, it's going to be unbelievable when, let's say, Bangladesh,
is underwater.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, the Pentagon has plans on what to do because of problems caused by climate change. See, here's the thing. I don't know if Trump is a climate change denier in his heart.
Says he is.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He's happy to say it for his own gain.
That's true. That's true.
You know, I don't think
that's the unknown, by the way.
Like, I don't think he's a racist. I don't think he's a racist. I don't think he's ever thought about anyone else long enough to form an opinion as strong as hate. I think he gets them to facial recognition and then goes back to thinking about himself.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. You know? I agree. He said he knew, this idiot, knew what to say to angry people.
Yeah.
He knew what to say.
Yeah.
Because he's one of them, you know. And he's a creation of the media with that fucking apprentice bullshit.
Yep.
They all saw him as like the master of the universe, right?
Right.
Like fire, you're fired, you know, and all that. He's a creation.
Yeah,
of the mass media.
Had the media done its job during the primaries, he wouldn't have gotten out of the primaries, but they were on the crack, man.
That's right. That's right. The media, huge, huge
CNN,
blame.
You know,
huge blame.
70% coverage of Donald Trump, 30% coverage of the other 15 people.
And where did Sanders? Did Sanders get any coverage?
I don't think so.
No, he didn't. And that's why we're at where we're at.
Right.
Now, there are problems with free trade because people cheat. Mm-hmm. And countries play games with their currency, and countries play games with tariffs. But the idea of adding more tariffs, you don't make it better, you make it worse.
The Depression was triggered by a trade war.
Yes, yes, Smoot-Hawley tariffs.
Yeah.
So. There's no story ever of tariffs working for working people.
Right.
The question, though, is when people, you know, steel dumping, there are legit arguments about people gaming the system. So I'm all for tough trade negotiations. But the idea that we can say, okay, we're going to just be an island and not trade anywhere, we'll have stagnation in our economy. Unemployment rate will triple.
Okay. Let's do a rapid fire.
But we could have saved the buggy whip industry that way.
Exactly.
We could have
done it. My old job is a telegram deliverer.
Yeah.
Let me do a lightning round of quick general questions. And then we'll hit the Mai Tais. Best case scenario, what would a President Clinton have done? What did you envision that 4 years of Hillary Clinton?
Well, I wasn't excited about it.
Right.
I think in foreign policy, she would have been better than Obama. My favorite moment in all the leaked emails, although I did prefer to read them in the original Russian, was when she was at something they were talking about I'm blanking on the name. Snowden.
Edward Snowden.
Yeah, she was like, well, can't we just take him out with a predator? And then what's for lunch? Oh, I'll have the soup. You know, so she was tough. And I think she would have – that's why the Russians didn't like her. I think she would – the foreign policy would have been a significant improvement over Obama. Domestically, I think
she
it would have been
– about Edward Snowden.
Well, I'm paraphrasing for comedy. But basically, she took a not fucking around point of view.
By the way, I also share that. I do. Yeah. You know, if you read a little bit of history
– he's a traitor. It's real simple.
It's real simple. Yeah. You might notice I'm not putting up a vociferous argument.
Yeah. No, he's not a good guy. then on domestic policy would have been a bunch of liberal crap that hurt the very people she wanted to help. We'd have more right. government, more debt, more taxes, more unemployment. Wouldn't right. have been good.
Worst case. So I think I get a view of your best case scenario with Trump. I think one of the things that troubles.
Let me set this up because I was talking with a historian friend about it. Now I'm going to drop one of these coastal at Harvard. I'm actually, believe it or not, a fellow at the Kennedy School, which shows you how low their standards have gotten.
Well, I will see your fellow and tell you that my first day job was working in the stationery department of the Harvard Coop.
Oh, there you are. Okay, exactly. Yeah. Anyway, so I'm there doing what we, of course, do at Harvard, which is think big thinking thoughts.
Sure, yeah.
See, I can't even get the sentence diagrammed right. And we came up with Trump historical analogies. And we decided at his worst, Huey Long. At his best, Charles de Gaulle.
Okay, and what's that?
Gaullist would mean protectionist but nationalist. Build the strength and might of France, kind of autocratic, but not a dictator.
Right.
But kind of that rampant nationalism with some clear-eyed idea of building up a strong French identity. Huge pain in the ass for the rest of the world to work with.
Yes.
And not necessarily an economic policymaker in the, really the French interest, but, you know, a patriotic, strong man for France.
An autocratic.
Semi-autocratic, super-nationalist.
Yeah, super-nationalist.
Huey Long, a populist, divisive, thuggish dictatorial personality. Yeah. Now, you won't have an American dictator. We can't governor Louisiana.
Right.
Who almost ran against FDR, but then was assassinated, but they were very worried about him because he was very populist in that same kind of way.
Right.
Every man a king was his make America great again. And he was a redistributionist. Take all the money and give it to you.
Yeah.
He made his career running against big Standard Oil companies. There are a couple of good biographies about him. The movie All the King's Men is about him.
Right.
Both the remake and, of course, the original. But he was more thuggish.
Let us say he takes the Huey Long Road. How does the system of checks and balances correct that? And how long until his voters in, outer Pennsylvania turn on him as well?
Well, I don't think his voters in outer Pennsylvania want Huey Long. They just want manufacturing jobs that pay a good wage. And they want the life they had 15 years ago back, and they're not going to quite get it. So we'll see what their patience is. But they don't want this whole that, there's this America that wants a fascist dictatorship and all that. No. They wanted to get rid of liberal Democrats, and they wanted a strong guy like Trump to drain the swamp, as he puts it, in Washington and make big changes and hopefully get our, manufacturing working class economy back. It was about that simple. And the more they were tisked and told, oh, you deplorable, Hillary and Barbara Streisand had a meeting and you're not allowed to be for Trump, the more they were for Trump. It's the old thing about, look, when the white working.
Boy, that one could not be more fucking true.
When the white working class gets really pissed, they don't riot and burn anything down. They vote for guys like Trump.
Right.
And they had a lot to be really pissed about. I'll give them that. You can't totally delegitimize the arguments for why there was a protest vote because it's the same power that drove Bernie Sanders up. There's a real similarity in the force behind it of the economic displacement. So, I would tell everybody to calm the hell down. We'll have another election in 4 years. And if Trump really shows fascist tendencies, all the never Trump Republicans are gun owners. So relax. We're organizing the army and we can fight him. But I get back to your life and try to be a virtuous citizen.
Yes.
Pay your taxes, do your work, be good to people in your personal lives and see what happens. That's my advice. You'll sleep better.
We finally really did it. You maniac! You blew it up! Oh, damn you! God damn you all to hell!
Other podcasts reach for the sky. Dana Goldbound.
We barely try.
The Dana Gould Hour. Never an hour.
This has been the Dana Gould Hour, brought to you by The Internet. Music by Andy Paley, with Jake Posner behind the board. produced by Jeff Fox. Graphic design and web production by Spencer Hunt and Segan Friend. Sound editing and post-production by Jalinda Palmer and Joe Napolitano.
Hey, if you like the show, why don't you drop us a line at show@danagould.com. Tom Kenny speaking.
I'm a DJ, I'm a person, I'm a singer, I love to sing and DJ. Boom! Peace out! You want me? Peace out! Boom.